So, I'm not that early today. But anyway, we can have a little bit of a chit-chat. If anybody, not that anybody usually have any questions, but if you do, I think not too confusing last week, unless some people come back. So last week we talked about aware space, about consciousness. And today we move on to something a bit different, yeah. Oh yes. Velcro, I was using, yeah. Yeah. In reality, I think, you see, the Velcro, our mind is like the hook side, right? And other people is what I call the fur ball, the furry part, right? Then when you come into contact with them, at first we don't have the Velcro, right? I mean, unless it's your children or whatever. No, at first it's just a nice soft contact between fur balls, you know, there's this touch. Then somewhere along the way, our fur ball turns into hooks, and then we start to hook into the, right? And then we apply more pieces of Velcro, right? Before we know it, we have 500 pieces of Velcro stuck onto this fur ball, right? So when the fur ball decided to go away, we felt it pulls on our heartstrings, isn't it? But the thing is, the hook doesn't add anything to that relationship, right? Because with or without the hook, when we come into contact with this person, it's a contact, right? It's in touch, to be in touch with the person. We don't need the hook to be in touch with them, right? And so that's what our common misunderstanding or attachment is. We think we need to be attached in order to be in touch, in order to be in love, right? But in actual fact, touch and love has nothing to do with hooks, isn't it? So when we come into contact with one another, that contact, that touch can be full of loving concern, isn't it? Yeah. And when we physically, let's say we have to separate from the person, no, then we, of course, we sense, we miss the person, right? And so the solution is not to grow hooks and, you know, and try to hang on to that person, isn't it? Because hanging on to a person is to prevent them from changing, is to tell them you cannot change, you cannot go away, which is, in a way, not only is it unnatural, but you are also limiting the other person, the growth of the other person. You're saying that for some reason or another, if they want to make you happy, they cannot go away from you, which is a limitation, right? Instead, we should think that when we are together, we are in physical contact and we can show love and concern. But even when we are physically apart, you know, love is not a physical thing, right? So connection can be maintained even though there is a physical distance. That means I can still love this person and still maintain that connection. And that is not harmed by the physical separation. For example, the meditation of Tongling that I talk about. Right. Tongling is a meditation where you imagine you breathe in the other person's unhappiness or difficulty, or compassion, and you breathe out and share your happiness and joy with that person out of love. Right. Now, Tongling is a meditation that helps you maintain connection with that person even when you're not physically there for them. No, my father could be in an operating theatre. I could be in the kopitiam, sitting there, drinking coffee, waiting for the surgeon to call, right? And normally, there is a physical separation, but there doesn't have to be a mental or emotional separation. So if I do Tongling meditation in the kopitiam, you know, in my mind, in my heart, I'm with him, isn't it? And that connection is one of love and compassion, right? So then I realized, then you can see, oh, I don't need the hooks. The hooks actually doesn't do anything at all to maintain that connection, isn't it? The hooks only cause me suffering. So that's when we learn to let go of our attachment. Yeah. Of course, isn't it? No, as children get older, they leave the nest. So say, right, no matter what you do, they have to leave, right? Then what happens is, even though they are not physically close, right? But it doesn't mean that you love them less or you have less concern for them, no? And if you can maintain this kind of mindset like Tongling, you may find that the relationship actually get better. Because a relationship based on hooks, sometimes the natural reaction is to run away, is to escape. Because the hooks, your hooks for them is a limitation, isn't it? Or even a burden sometimes. Sometimes we felt our parents' attachment. We felt that when our choices doesn't match their expectation, we are in a way disappointing them. But there is this urge to find your own way, you know, to live your own life. And so so in order to do that, it's at the expense of, or at the cost of disappointing one's parents. And sometimes that doesn't feel nice, doesn't feel good, isn't it? And that is actually a form of suffering, right? So I think by withdrawing the hooks, we are offering them a gift also in that sense. No need. They don't even need to know you do Tongling. And the magic of Tongling is, sometimes, even when you do it with this person, there's no idea what meditation is. And I've heard this story many times. They sense something is different. Yeah. And they will say, I have heard this story of someone, you know, went to the hospital, visit a relative or a good friend, I can't remember, and just silently sit there and did Tongling, right? The next time I visit, the friend said, well, look, I don't know what you did last time, but please do more of it. It felt very good, no? That is the amazing thing about Tongling, is that without any kind of physical contact or even verbalizing, you are just holding the person in mind out of love and compassion. And maybe that changes the way you look at them or you relate it to them, but we are very sensitive to this kind of thing. We feel that, you know. And who wouldn't want to be held in another person's loving concern and compassion, isn't it? It's so non-judgmental, so accepting, and so healing in some sense. So when it's like a gift to another person, and sometimes, of course, it's nice if they somehow notice it. Just don't try to advertise it subtly. You know, I did this thing called Tongling for you last week, you know. Do you feel anything? It's very powerful, you know. Yeah. So long as you don't do this kind of emotional blackmailing, then I think it's a plus to a relationship. Okay? All right. So we have been looking at what we call insight meditation, which is quite different from what most people are familiar with. Most of us, when we come to meditation, we are familiar with a type of meditation that quite often called concentration meditation. Or I always call it calm abiding meditation. It's a meditation where, you know, most of us, because we are stressed, we have a lot of rumination, a lot of thinking, very distressing kind of thinking, so it calms everything down. You know? Everything becomes so much more quiet, still, and then we relax more and we say, no. But that kind of peace is temporary. Right. Calm abiding meditation, when it works, of course, it's nice, but it's a temporary kind of respite. Okay? Because sooner or later, you just stop meditate, right? You know? Then when you stop meditate, you have to go back to work or you know, interact with other people. After a while, the effect wears off, and the old habits, the old reactions starts again, right? You know, I often compare it to massage, right? I have a good friend who is a massage therapist. And when I visit in Sydney, then I get a free massage, right? Very nice. Mm-hmm. Usually 1.5 hours, well, very good. Yeah. Otherwise, usually she charge a lot of money. So then I really enjoy the massage. Under the physical massage, then a lot of the bodily reactions releases. Feels very nice, right? Wonderful sense of relaxation. But I'm so I'm in the head, right? So even once the massage finished, I'm still lying on the massage table, right? So usually she gives me a few minutes before I need to get up, no, and get out, right? So even lying on the table, knowing that it's over, I start to feel that wonderful sense of relaxation is fading away, and my habituated tension is coming back. Right? Because a lot of times those tensions, the physical aspect of it, is really a mirror of what's going on inside my mind, right? My stress, my distress, you know. And so if I start thinking about those things, of course the physical tension will slowly starts coming back, yeah. So it's nice to have that respite during massage, but it's not the final solution, right? Other people do better than me, like maybe if they can last 1 or 2 days before it all come back. Because the underlying source of the stress has not been directly addressed, isn't it? So I'm still carrying around those very habituated way of reacting to what is happening, right? Physically, mentally, emotionally. So long as those reactions remain, they can still be triggered, and I'll find myself back in a similar situation. Okay? So calm abiding meditation is good, it's wonderful, but we also need this other type, insight meditation. So insight meditation basically means we go a bit deeper, right? We try to change our habits of reactions. Not only do we manage to calm them down, but we actually change them so that we don't have to react in the same way. Or what used to cause us a lot of anxiety or upset, if we say, now it's like a piece of cake. You didn't even think about it, right? And we can see that also sometimes, like maybe at work, you and your colleague was assigned the same project, and you react to it, right? You're very stressed out, you know, you're very anxious. Sometimes, especially when you're new to the job, right? Then your colleague is those, you know, old-timer, doesn't think a thing, absolutely no reaction at all, as if it's just another day, you know? So very different reactions to similar situation, right? And that is good to see, because it shows you that there is an alternative to how you can handle the situation, how you can relate to it and respond to it. And the challenge is how to get there, right? In most of the time in real life situation is the accumulation of experiences, life experiences, past experiences. But when we start off, we are new, we are unfamiliar, with time, with repetition, we become familiar, we gain confidence, we figure out our way, how to deal with it, and then we find that the reactions change, isn't it? You know, when we first started, we react in this way. After a few years, you didn't even think about it. You know, it's no longer an issue, right? Okay. So similarly, in other aspects of life, it's just that those that keep giving us trouble are those habituated reactions that we never manage to find an alternative to. We are stuck with it. And this usually is reactions or what sometimes people call strategies that we pick up since young. Like you can tell, you know, different people have different strategies in life, right? If you want to, in a very oversimplification, some people adopt the aggressive way, right? Aggression, confrontation. Other people adopt the avoidance way, right? Avoid. And other people adopt the denial way. Huh? Is there a problem? I didn't know about it. No. So that's different strategies. And this is because we have been using them for a very, very long time, right? And so they're very entrenched. Okay. And in Buddhism, the Buddha explained our suffering as it's based on our habituated reactions, right? And of course, the Buddha, aiming to help us be free from all suffering, goes even deeper and says that the deeply entrenched reactions stem out of our mistaken idea, thinking that there is a self here, an unchanging self. That is the most important thing. It's not that we don't exist, but it's we think that there's something here, we want something here that doesn't change, right? An unchanging self, right? And because this is unchanging self, an unchanging self, unfortunately, is something that exists isolated or independent or anything else. So now I'm all alone. Then I found this thing. Oh, this is so pleasant. That's why we develop attachment. We want to hang on to it. They say, oh, this is so unpleasant, I want to get rid of it, right? And this one doesn't do anything for me, forget about it, yeah. Right? So we have all these very instinctive reactions. Right? This is how the Buddhist way of analyzing reaction. So inside meditation, try to address this, right? This deep-seated problem and habits by helping us to realize that maybe there isn't a self, this unchanging self. Maybe it's not there. Then when it's not there, and you don't activate it, all this attachment and aversion and indifference disappear. Because they are all dependent on this view of self. Yeah. And that's what I've been looking at across the different school of Buddhist philosophy. I start out with what we call Sutra school. And I say that in the Sutra school, the sense of unchanging self is maintained by what we call self-centered thinking. Those of you who attended, yeah, thinking like this, thinking, 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 and it forms like a tunnel. You know, you really sort of, you get caught in your thinking, you know, and a tunnel is a limitation, right? You either go forward or you go backward, and there's nothing else, right? And so the way out is to look at your tunnel a bit closely, you know, by labeling all these different thoughts, like, or thinking, or just a thought, just a thought, just a thought. And the more, as you get better at it, the gap between those thoughts get bigger and bigger. It's like your tunnel, instead of making a solid brick work, there seems to be holes inside the bricks, right, between the bricks. And as the hole gets bigger and bigger, one day the tunnel sort of collapses, you know, disappears. Then you say, oh, I don't have to think like this. I have much more options to think differently and respond differently. Okay, so that is what we cover in the first session. Second session, from the mind-only school perspective of Buddhist philosophy, mind-only school is a bit what I was trying to present last week. Is we're usually very obsessed with objects, right? This object, nice object, ugly object, nice person, attractive person, unattractive person. These are all objects, right? And in mind-only school, bring our attention back to the subject, back to the conscious awareness itself. Because we are conscious, you know, there is this thing called consciousness, that we are aware of all these different objects, right? So we try to bring our attention, shift our attention from the object back to the consciousness, back to the mind itself, to realize actually a lot of those things are our own creation of our own mind. Our mind sort of, we add different things, we exaggerate different things, we project different things onto it. So bring it back to the mind. And how to do that? You know, that's what I was trying to present last week, is maybe we can start with listening, yeah, if you remember. Listening among all our senses is a bit unusual because most of the senses, especially sight, seeing, is very specific, isn't it? I see this bell, I see this cup, they're all very isolated individual. But if you were to listen, sometimes you can, not only do you can hear the sound, but you get a sense that the sound happened within a space, right? Like if this space is a bit echoey, you really can feel that the sound seems to be moving through a large space, isn't it? You have a sense of that space. Or if you are in a very cramped space, sometimes you get a sense that the sound comes to you through a very cluttered space, right? So not only do you notice the object, the sound, but you notice a little bit of its so-called ambience or environment. Right? And that environment is provided, not in that case, but in by our consciousness. You know? So that's why I quite often call consciousness your aware space. Right? Sometimes you notice your so-called aware space is very cluttered, right? Especially your mental aware space. Lots and lots of thoughts, one after another. You know? It's full of thoughts. Can't see any gap in between. Right, so that is one manifestation of your mental aware space. Other times when you meditate, then you say, oh, so nice, almost no thought. Of course, this itself is a thought. Yeah. Then you have this sense that your mental aware space is very empty, very spacious, very nice, right? As compared to the cluttered one. Okay, so that is what I was trying to introduce, is introduce you to your own consciousness, your own aware space, and really notice the difference, right? And how, and then the second meditation was, if you look at your aware space, is there anything at the center of your aware space? the place where we always say, I, me, I'm here, I'm listening, I'm seeing, I'm feeling, I'm happy, I'm unhappy. No. In the mindfulness school presentation, there are just different kind of awareness and consciousness, different types of aware space appearing, disappearing. At the center of it is completely empty. You don't need a lump of thing called the self sitting in the middle in order for your consciousness to function. So that is just very roughly what I have covered previously. It's a lot of words, yeah, I know. But so today we'll do something very different. Today we are exploring insight meditation in what we call the Middle Way School, or Madhyamika, a very famous school of Buddhist philosophy. And here, insight meditation is what we call analytical meditation. Most people are very not familiar with analytical meditation. Analytical meditation actually means you need to think in your meditation. Right? Here, we're not trying to slow down our thinking or stop thinking. Here, we actually harness the power of thinking, right? And use thinking to help us find a way out of our dilemma, help us to find a new perspective. So I'm going to describe how to think, and then we'll do a meditation. So we're going to look for the self. We're going to say, if there is something unchanging here that I call me or self, I should be able to find it. So we're going to analyze six different components of our, the most likely where we will find ourselves, or they will make up ourselves. Right, there are the six elements, or you can think of it as six components: earth, water, fire, air, space, and consciousness. Right. So the first four are physical. It's almost like your body, basically. Yeah. So maybe you will find your sense of self somewhere inside your body. Maybe, maybe not. And there's space, within us. And there's also this thing called consciousness. So we're going to look at them. The first meditation, we look at the first four or five. We see how it goes. And I'm trying to get you to see your body in a different way. The earth element are the solid part of the body. Where does that come from? Is the solid part of your body really you? Is it belongs to you, absolutely, or not? After all, we start our life in this life as a single cell embryo, single cell. You didn't bring a lot of material with you, my dear. You're just one tiny little cell. And like in IVF, right, you have to use a microscope in order to see the beginning of you. No, you're just that one cell. Hey, where does all these other things come from? No, where do you go for ananguli and get some and stick onto yourself? Where does this single embryo grow? And then in the beginning of our life, we receive all those material nutrients from our mother, right, in the womb, a little after birth, to milk, right? And then later a bit, you advance to baby food. Then as you get bigger, you eat, you drink, and all those things becomes the solid part of you, right? Make your bone, your muscles, your tendons, your ligaments, your hair, your nails, everything, right? So that is how outer earth elements become so-called inner earth element. And it doesn't stop there. Then you cut your hair. I was telling my great niece, you're naughty, you'll be like great uncle, Botak. She said, no, I want my hair. So we, so when we, what is me, or inside me, or sort of your hair, go onto the floor and becomes not me, right? Inner earth elements become outer earth element. You clip your nails, you shed your skin cells, you visit the bathroom, right? What is inside you, go outside back, right? So the cycle of earth element. Something comes in, something goes out. So in this huge cycle that continue, the day the cycle stops is not good news for you, okay? This great cycle, which part of the earth element can I say, hey, that's me. Oh no, I'm going down the toilet bowl. No. Or I left it, I clipped the nails and I left myself on the floor of the bus. That's what I hate about Singaporeans.
clipping their nails on public grass. Tak, tak, tak. Yeah, that's one thing I cannot stand. Yeah. Alright.
So, and can I say that this part of the earth element is absolutely me? I hang on to it. You cannot go. If you go out, then that's it. But as they say, I think every cell in our body is replaced every 7 years. Bad news for you. No? You have been replaced somewhere along the way. Right? Earth element, same. Water also, water element. Fire element is energy. Air element, of course, is air. So we're going to investigate this in a meditative form. And of course, it sounds like a lot of words, but once you get into it, it's quite. I find it quite enjoyable because you know, you really appreciate that we are not so separate from our environment, and that we are always in relationship with our environment. Okay, let's do a meditation and see how. Okay, I'll guide you through it. So, as usual, find a suitable posture. So those of you sitting on the chair, make sure you have both feet firmly planted on the ground. Maybe put a cushion if you cannot touch the ground, because we want to give the body a sense that it is really well supported. You don't have to be wobbly here, wobbly there. And those of us sitting on the floor, try to adopt a cross-legged posture that doesn't cause you any unnecessary pain or discomfort. And either way, most important is just to allow your back, your spine to feel comfortably upright. You don't have to deliberately tense up your back muscle to try to straighten the spine. In fact, best not to do it. Instead, just adjust your posture so that you feel that you can allow your back, your spine to be upright in a comfortable way, that your chest is open, not collapsed, you can breathe freely and easily. Rest your hands, both hands, you can rest them on your knees or one on top of the other in your lap, just so that your shoulders feels relaxed. Eyes, you can close them completely in this meditation. So see if you can become aware of sensations at the points of contact between your body and your seat, your body and the ground in this posture. Allow your body to feel that it is resting on something very solid, firm and stable. Sensations that come to you from those points of contact. These sensations are associated with the earth elements. Stability, balance, firmness, solidity. And they help to reassure your body that it is well supported in this posture and it is safe. And automatically, in its own time, you'll find that your body can start to loosen up a bit, unwind a bit, let go of some of those unnecessary tensions and tightness so that it can settle down comfortably into the posture. So next we're going to spend a few minutes at the beginning of the meditation just to help our body and mind to come back here and now, settle into the posture, settle into the meditation. And we do that by making use of our breath as a support. So see if you can become aware of the breath sensations in the body. So by that I mean sensations that is associated with your breathing. So some people may notice the breath around the nostrils, where you can feel the air flow in and out of your body. You may also notice the movements of your chest with each breath, expanding, contracting. And sometimes some of us may even notice the movements of the abdomen, a movement of rising and falling as we breathe in and out. So see if you can allow your attention to come back and reconnect with all these different sensations of the breath within your body. very simple sensations, almost like a wave-like movement, flowing in and out, expanding, contracting, rising and falling. And of course, you will find that your attention doesn't stay with the breath. You get distracted, you move to sounds, other bodily sensations, thoughts in the mind. So all that is perfectly normal. And all we need to do when we notice that is we can just choose to return our attention, come back and reconnect with the breath sensations. So each time you come back to the breath, that is your meditation practice. See if you can notice especially your out-breath, breathing out. Often there is a sense of release that comes along with it. We relax the muscles of our diaphragm and chest so that we can release the carbon dioxide in our lungs. We breathe out, we let that go. So associate your out-breath with the opportunity to release. Just as we release the still air in our lungs, tell yourself, tell your body and mind, they can also release other things unwanted, unnecessary. Maybe some of the tightness or tension and discomfort in your body can flow away with your out-breath. So for example, we do habitually tense up our facial muscles unconsciously. So breathing out, if you notice you have been tightening the muscles of your forehead or muscles of your jaw or muscles around your eyes, with an out-breath, see if you can release some of those tension. Just allow the face to feel softer, more comfortable, more at ease. So coming back, reconnecting with the breath sensations again and again, with each out-breath, you can even in your mind say the word release. To remind yourself, your body and your mind, as you breathe out, you can release anything unhelpful in your experience, in your body, in your mind. Just let them go with the breath. Release those thoughts that preoccupy your mind, your attention. Imagine releasing some of the tension and tightness in the body. So do not be impatient with yourself or get frustrated at your own experiences. If you notice there's a lot of activities or distractions in the mind, just remind yourself this is perfectly normal. And all we need to do is to continue returning our attention to the breath, breathing out and deepen the sense of release. The more things
appear, arise within your experience, the more things you can release and let them go with the out-breath. And we can allow this process of unwinding, of settling down, of releasing to just continue on and on, even if we are not consciously doing it. And what I'm going to invite you to do now, in the actual meditation portion of this session, I invite you to bring in different thoughts, different ideas and images, to explore a certain theme, to see if you can gain your own a deeper understanding or a different insight. And here we're going to explore the relationship between what we call outer and inner elements. Elements such as earth, water, fire and air, the physical aspects of ourselves. Starting with the earth. As you feel your in-breath breathing in, just as we let in oxygen from outside to inside, ask yourself, how does the outer earth elements enter and become inner, become a part of me, or become me? After all, we all start life as a single cell. So where does all the bones, all my muscles, all the mass and weight, where do they come from? So tap into your own memories, bring to mind all those occasions, all those experiences where outer earth elements enter into our system, through food mostly, or drink, starting off with baby food, and then we progress onto all the makans that we have done in this life. Maybe some of them, some of those occasions can come to mind. Breathing in, let in, and become aware of how outer earth elements enter, nourishes our body, build our body, help us to grow, help us to repair, help us to put on weight. Outer elements become inner earth elements. And then we add on to that, each time you feel an out-breath as we breathe out, over and above that out-breath, we can imagine, we can reflect, how does inner earth element return to the outside? Each time we cut our hair, clip our nails, a little bit of our inner earth elements return to the outer. We visit the bathroom. And also those occasions when we try to lose weight, we go on diets, what happened then? Inner earth element doesn't always stay inside. They also return to the greater outer environment. So in-breath, reflect on how outer becomes inner. Out-breath, reflect on how inner return to the outer. This is the great cycle of earth element. And then we ask ourselves, within that cycle, is there something we can point to, some earth element we can point to and say, that's me, that's my unchanging self, or that is mine, that belongs to me, no one can take that away from me. And then in the same way, we do it with water elements, with all the fluids, the liquid within ourselves. Where do they come from? All the drinking of water, fruit juice, alcohol, IV, so on and so forth, outer water elements flow in and becomes inner. So as you breathe in, maybe some of those past experiences can come back to you, where outer water element enters and becomes inner. And likewise, breathing out, reflect on how inner returns to the outer. We visit the toilet, we sweat, we cry. All the inner water elements flow out. Ask ourselves, in the cycle of water elements, is there any portion of that water I can point to and say, that's me, that's my unchanging self, or that's mine, that belongs to me, and no one can take it away from me. Coming back to the breath, we move on to fire element, the energy within ourselves. Energy that maintains our body temperature, the so-called fire energy that allows us to move, to engage in activity, just to keep alive. Where does that energy come from? Maybe standing out in the sun, we absorb a bit of the warmth, but mostly through food and drinks, energy within the food, within the drinks, we assimilate to give ourselves energy. Outer becomes inner. Breathing out, again reflect how inner fire elements returns to the outer. We radiate heat through our body, we move, we engage in activity, we use up those energy. And on occasion when we are in a very cold room or cold place, all the heat is sucked out of our body. Inner returns to the outer. So once again, ask yourself, in the cycle of fire elements, is there anything you can point to as the self, as definitely and absolutely mine? Coming back to the breath, one last element, air element. Breathing in, we're taking oxygen, outer becomes inner. Breathing out, we release carbon dioxide, inner returns to the outer. Is there any portion of the air element we can hold on to, we point to as the self, as definitely mine? So now come back, rest your attention on the ever-changing breath within your body. Enjoy the sensations of the breath flowing in and out. Allow yourself to become aware of some of those changes associated with this great cycle of movements of the different physical elements. Outer becomes inner, inner becomes outer. Is there really anything here that is unchanging, that is solid? Do you really need an unchanging self? Okay, so there's 20 minutes of analytical meditation, which is not everyone's cup of tea. Tends to be, I think a lot of people find it a bit strange because maybe you have never encountered it, or it seems very busy. Yeah. Analytical meditation tends to be, like, a lot of things happening, you have to do a lot of thinking, remembering, wondering, asking questions. I like it, yeah. Because I like to think. I think and think and think, even on a Burmese Vipassana retreat. 10 days. This one is the usual, like, just, this one is to do with the breath. Watch your breath, whether you're sitting or you're walking meditation, walking back and forth, walking, pacing, yeah. And every time I go to the interview, the teacher will say, "So how's your meditation?" Thinking. See? Then first meditation, first interview like this, second interview like this, third interview, she finally say, "What are you thinking about?" I say, "I don't know, I'm just thinking." Yeah. So I like analytical meditation because it actually asks you to think, but in the thing in a very specific way. And so it doesn't, at first it doesn't come across as very calming, or you find, you know, it's almost similar to our daily experiences, you know. But you train yourself to think in a specific way. And the thinking is not just words. You have to draw out your own life experiences. You're basically trying to see whether you can think or see things in a different perspective, something new, something that will allow you to shift out of your old reactions and find a new way to relate to things. You know? So one example is, let's say if I have a problem, I don't actually have problem with my boss, but I always use my boss, my ex-bosses as an example. I do have very good relationship with them, but occasionally they piss me off. Then, no, when they come to mind, then I have all these negative things in my mind, blah, 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 blah. No, that's how we think, reactingly. Yeah. So when we do analytical meditation, we try to, you know, don't go there and say, how can I think of or see this person differently? I try to remember different aspects of that same person. No, when they are kind, when they are very, or qualities that I admire in them, you know, how capable they are, and their knowledge, and so on. Or sometimes with some people, how unhappy they are. You know, that helps me sometimes, you know, to sort of figure out that, oh, actually they are very unhappy. And I know when I'm unhappy, you should stay away from me. Okay, I will make your life miserable. That's what unhappy people do, unfortunately. They really need help, but they have this great tendency of sharing their unhappiness, or they drag you down the pit of unhappiness. Yeah. So sometimes when I see this person as an unhappy person, I'm actually more compassionate, more understanding or more accepting. So, okay, lah, no, I leave you alone. I know you're in a bad mood, so I don't talk to you. Okay, so there's a different perspective. Okay, before I continue, is there any question so far? Yes? Huh? Penetrative. You need to add another word to it. I think it's called penetrative insight meditation. Same as this. They just add a word, penetrative, or special, or higher, or whatever. It's the same. It's just different adjective, that's all. Yeah. It's penetrative because if you start to think differently, it's almost as if previously you're just at the surface, and now you see deeper, right? So you penetrate deeper. Yeah. Any other questions? Do you feel your cycle? Do you feel you are part of a cycle? No? You're very solid, stuck there. Things come, things go, but I'm perfectly fine. I'm solid. Yeah. Before we look at space and consciousness, I just want to explain where we are going. Sometimes it might help. A lot of time when we start to meditate, or even when we don't meditate, some of us have this experience that as if I use a river as a metaphor. Our life is the river. Well, the life experiences are happy, not happy, good experience, but it's this river, right? And I'm the bystander. I stand at the bank of the river. There's not much river in Singapore. No? I used to joke about Singapore River. I think when I was young, I didn't know it's a river. I thought it was a big drain. Because all built out, like, doesn't look like those pictures of river, but it is a river. Yeah? So river flows, and some people actually have this as just how they see their life. They feel that they are like a bystander, onlooker. They stand at the bank of the river and look in, and they see this, you know, ever-changing experiences. Right? Other people, they feel like, especially when they are in really a lot of emotional turmoil, they feel like they are. There's still an onlooker, but this onlooker, suddenly someone pushed him or her and you fell into the river, right? And you're drowning, you're struggling in the river of life. There's all these experiences keep coming, pulling you down, submerging you, and all you can do is just trying to stay afloat, trying to breathe, right? So there's you and the river, right? Then other people who meditate, and then they find out, they have this epiphany. They say, oh, I'm sitting on the boat, floating down the river of my life. Okay? Now, so I'm untouched. The river can be peaceful or choppy, but I'm safe in the boat. No. Okay? Now, all these images, which is a way of describing how we see our life and ourselves in relation, our life experience and our self in relation to that, there is a separation. Right? There is a me, either on the bank or drowning in the river or on the boat. Or, there is a separation between me and the river of life. Okay? Right? And the Buddha says any one of this version, any one of this view is incomplete and inaccurate. There is always this fundamental separation, right? Or independence. And this separation, according to the Buddha, is the source of our problem. See, because then you stand on the bank and then you can judge, right? Oh, this is a good one. Hey, I want more of this. No, that is the bad one. Go away. Like things floating down the river, lah, no? Say, oh, this is good. Hey, come. Oh, no, don't go. And then it's gone. Right? So that's why we have all this reaction. We cling, try to cling onto something. We try to hold on. You know, you use a net and try to net it. And you hang on to it. You know, your true source of happiness, your partner. You know, you must not let them go. Let them off your net. You must hang on to them for dear life. Or if some unpleasant things come into your river of experience, you try to get rid of it. Right? You try very hard. Right? And so your entire life is spent trying to hang on to something or get rid of something, but unfortunately the river never stops flowing. Just flow and flow and flow. It doesn't matter what you do on the bank. No, you can pray. It still flows, still change, isn't it? And that's where all our anguish, our happiness, unhappiness, you know, all this suffering comes from. So what is the Buddha's version and what we are trying to discover inside meditation? Can sound a bit shocking, right? Okay. What do you think the version is? I give you, usually no people answer, but anyway, I ask you, what do you think, you know, based on this metaphor, what is the Buddha's vision of ourselves and our life? Using the same metaphor, what do you think? Anybody? Want to game enough to try? Go with the flow. How do you go with the flow? Like surfing, you have a surfboard and you surf. Is that how you say? But there's still a separation, right? There's you on the surfboard and there's the river, right? It's nice, no? You surf, okay. But there's still a separation. Any other attempt? Yes? Yeah, but what is the Buddha's version of it? The subject is the onlooker, right? The object is the river. So, okay, we know that. So what is the Buddha's vision? What would it be like? Yeah, but in this metaphor, how will it play out? How does it look like? Huh? Say again? Yeah, how does it look in this metaphor? Empty, what is there, what is not there? Huh? Yeah, but those are labels, you see. So that's why I give you this scenario, this metaphor. So how does non-duality, emptiness, interdependence manifest in this image? How? You have to apply that label to that image. How does it look like? There is no self, then what is there? Not, huh? Yeah, impermanence. You see, that's why you need to push your understanding a bit deeper. You have all these words, right? Impermanence, interdependence, emptiness, non-duality, no self, right? Apply it to this scenario. There you are. There is only the river, ever-flowing river, and you are actually that river, right? So in that scenario, it's empty of onlooker, empty of anybody surfing or anyone in the boat, empty of anyone at the bank trying to hold on to any experiences. No, there is no self on the bank, on the boat. It's empty of it. And of course, what is only there is the interdependence of the different conditions. Some conditions arise, then the river is broad and smooth. On a different condition, on different kind of weather or whatever, the river can be very choppy, and then yet on another condition, the river can be very tiny, just a tiny stream. So ever-changing, which is really, according to the most accurate description of who we all are. We are all river, living river, ever-flowing with different experiences depending on the different conditions. You know? And so when you relinquish the sense of self and become or not become, to realize that you have always been just this river, a lot of the suffering that we now experience disappear, because those suffering is based on a misunderstanding. Yeah? So when we become the river, you no longer try to hold on to any experiences. There's nothing to hold. There's no one to hold and nothing to hold, right? And so, but it also means that you can just enjoy whatever is there. You know? No need to worry, you know. If the conditions gather again, new experiences will come back to you. Yeah. So you, in fact, you become more relaxed. You know? Whereas, like what we start off earlier, we talk about attachment, when we try to hang on. We think we can hang on to someone that we love by applying our Velcro strip, right? All the hooks. We try to hook onto them as if they are like a fur ball, we try to hook onto them. Then you realize that actually is self-defeating. No, in fact, when we withdraw the hooks and we just cherish the contact we have with them, things actually get better. No, it's actually a more freeing and loving relationship, and so much so that even when you are physically apart, you are nonetheless still connected at heart. Because you care about that person and that person still think of you, still care about you. And that distance does not mean a diminishing of that love and that connection, right? Whereas, that is nice, isn't it? Wonderful. Sometimes we do need to be physically apart. Whereas if you hook, and what the other person is trying to do is trying to run away, stay away, don't come back, or like me, Chinese New Year, where can I go? Where can I escape from all my relatives, you know, who are supposed to concern about me, but they always have something to say about my life. Yeah? So I want to escape, right? So you don't want that as the basis of a relationship, isn't it? You want to be able to meet one another, be in touch, and you regard one another, even when you're not seeing them, one another, with love, with concern, you know? Yeah. So sometimes without the hooks works better, right? So we're going to do a meditation and see whether we can realize that we have always been a river of life experiences. Yeah. So this one, and that river is ever-changing. There's nothing unchanging. Okay. So this one I'm going to invite you to... This one is less of an analytical, maybe more of a calm abiding. We'll see how it goes. I invite you to identify as we settle into meditation that any moment is just a moment of different type of conscious experience. So for example, I invite you to observe your breath. So as you feel the in-breath, that is a moment of what we call tactile experience, right? In-breath is tactile experience, out-breath is tactile experience. You feel sensation in your face, there's another moment of tactile experience. And along the way, you hear my voice, that is listening, that is experience of hearing consciousness. Then after that, you may notice you are thinking. That is your mental consciousness, thinking consciousness. So it's like, these are the component, the water of your river. Different types of conscious experiences. You know, feeling, thinking, sensing, hearing, bodily experiences. It's just ever-changing, one after another. And that is all that is here. You know, you don't actually need something like an onlooker, someone or something that doesn't change, and park that thing in the middle and say, oh, that's me, and I'm having all this experience. Not necessary. You no need to have that kind of, you need to grasp onto that kind of self. You then just enjoy each moment as it comes. And in fact, as you do that, you find that your meditation goes more effortless and easier. You welcome whatever experience to come each moment. One moment is the in-breath, then it's the out-breath, then maybe, oh, there's a thought pop inside. That's all right. No, maybe thoughts, and then another thought, and another thought, and then you can find your way back, and then you can say, eh, another breath, in-breath, out-breath. Oh, now Wai Chong start talking. Hearing, sound appear. No, it's just all these ever-changing life experiences arising, you know, in the form of different conscious experiences. If you go with the flow, like what we just say, yeah, go with flow, what happened? No, so let's just give it a try and see. Okay, so let's start again. Once again, settle into a comfortable, supportive posture with the back upright in a natural way without the need to tense up your back muscles. Don't have to try consciously and deliberately to straighten your back. So let your body find its way into this upright, supportive posture. And just as before, we're going to take a few minutes at the beginning of the meditation, reconnecting with the breath sensations, allowing the breath sensations to come into your awareness so that there is clear, conscious experience of the in-breath and the out-breath. And each time when there is an out-breath, when there is sense of air flowing out, remind yourself with the word release, that this is also a movement, an opportunity to release. Don't worry what is being released, no need to deliberately try to make something happen. Just say the word release in the mind. Give permission that maybe some physical tension, unnecessary tension, may just flow with the breath, maybe the different thoughts or images that pop into the mind, not related to the meditation, can also go with the breath. Attending to the breath sensations, or finding your attention returning to the breath. Alongside the breath, you will become aware. Other things enter into awareness. Bodily sensations of tension, tightness, of relaxation. Feelings of comfort, ease, feeling of discomfort. Sounds in the surrounding, sound in the form of my voice, and most probably thoughts in the form of inner commentary, you talking to yourself, thoughts in the form of memories, in the form of fantasies, in the form of planning. Different experiences arise within this river, the river of your consciousness. Coming back to the breath sensations, attending to the breath, using the breath as a support. Very often when we meditate, we have a strong sense of ourselves as a meditator, as the controller of our experiences. We try to control what happened in our meditation. We want our thoughts to stop. We want the breath to stay. We want different things. We struggle against what is happening, we get frustrated, we get impatient. Now I invite you to try something different. Maybe there is no such thing as a separate, independent meditator, a controller. There's different experiences coming and going. All you need to remember is at any point of time, when you become awake, aware, there is a choice of returning attention to the breath. That's the only thing that needs to happen. Coming back to the breath, allow the in-breath, the out-breath to come all the way back into awareness. Attending to the breath sensations, remember an out-breath is always an opportunity to release, to let go, to allow something the chance to fade away from consciousness. See if you can simplify this meditation so that you almost do nothing. Just different experiences arises, coming and going, and occasionally you remember, and then attention can come back to the breath. See what happens. coming back to the breath, attending to breath sensations. Maybe some of you may experience in your meditation lots of thoughts, almost as if there are lots of distractions, lots of activities. Maybe you might think that you are not a good meditator, or this is not a good meditation, something is wrong. But maybe it's just the river of consciousness is flowing through a rough spot. Lots of rocks, lots of conditions that stirs up, make the water not peaceful. So all the thoughts that arise are just responding to the conditions here and now. All we need to do is almost nothing. Just remember, return the attention, come back to the breath, and as we breathe out, release and see what happens. So coming back to the breath, experiencing the breath sensations, deepening the sense of release with each out-breath. Occasionally some of us may find ourselves in a sweet spot. Body seems to become more relaxed, mind seems to be calmer. This is simply because the river of life is flowing through a different set of conditions, moving slower, not disturbed, calmer, more peaceful. How wonderful. While it is here, enjoy this set of conditions, enjoy any pleasant experiences of relaxations, of stillness, because later on things can change again. So coming back, once again, reminding yourself, returning attention to your own breath sensations flowing in and out. There is no need to struggle against what is happening in meditation. There is no need to force the mind attention to stay with the breath. Attention doesn't have to stay with the breath, because attention can always come back to the breath. Come back to the breath with an out-breath, deeply releasing. So you are almost doing nothing in this meditation. Only the river of your conscious experiences flowing on and on and on. And then finally, as you return your attention to the breath, become aware of the breath sensations, also notice the state of your river of experiences in this moment. The river of bodily experiences, are there a lot of tension, tightness, unpleasant sensations, or are there feeling of relaxation, of ease and comfort? Now, about the river of mental experiences? There are lots of thoughts, thinking about this and that, talking to yourself. Or they're relatively quiet, peaceful, still. Or maybe there's an overwhelming sense of sleepiness, drowsiness and dullness. So without labeling that river of experience as good or bad, see if you can be more in touch and more aware of what is actually happening in this moment. my aim when I present meditation is to see if I can get people to come to a place where they find their meditation is effortless. You know, because quite often when people start meditating, they feel that it's a lot of work, a lot of struggle, actually. The work comes from the struggle. Struggle against what they find in their meditation experience. Too much thoughts, too much pain, too much discomfort, too much sleepiness. So a lot of struggle. I don't want this. I don't want this. Or a struggle. I want that. I want that. Right? And so there's a lot of work. They feel exhausted. That's why they don't meditate. And also it's very unpleasant. Whereas if you change your perspective, you know, you can get rid of all this struggle. The struggle comes from a lot of our expectations, a lot of this sense of judgment, or I want to be a good meditator, I don't want to be a bad meditator, I want to have more good meditation experience, I don't want the bad meditation experience. When you drop all of those things, all you have is just like any other moments in life, you know, just different experiences coming up. Sometimes there's a lot of thoughts, a lot of thinking, because of certain conditions in our life. And sometimes there's a lot of sleeping. You sleep and sleep and sleep. No matter what you do in your meditation, in the morning you sleep. You do meditation in the evening, you sleep. You do it here, you also sleep. No, just sleep and sleep and sleep. And it's not because you're a bad meditator. Maybe you just don't have enough sleep. That's all. Right? So when you sleep enough, all your sleepiness will disappear. Yeah. And then other times, occasionally you find, hey, what happened now? No, attention seems to be just with the breath, in and out, and very peaceful, not much thoughts, not much thinking, not much doing. It's just quite pleasant. No. So in this approach to, from the Middle Way School of Buddhist philosophy, is to understand that everything depends on conditions, what we call interdependence. Right? So just as the body, you know, the four elements, it's not a solid lump of thing that we drag around with us in life. It's actually, it's constantly changing, depending on what we put in and depending on what goes out. You know, you put in a lot and not much go out, then you get increase in weight. You know, as simple as that. So it's actually a cycle, a living cycle. Yeah. So likewise, that is physically, then mentally, you know, our conscious experiences are just like a river ever flowing, and depending on different conditions, your river of conscious experiences manifests in different states, different conditions. Yeah. So as you sort of try to come to this kind of perspective, then meditation is not about fighting the river. Could you imagine jumping into the river and fight with the river and say, no, you should be peaceful now. People thought you're siao one, right? The river is what it is because of the conditions, you know, that is happening. So if the conditions do not change, the river will continue to manifest that state, right? So therefore, no need to fight, no need to struggle so much. Just something very simple, you know, as I mentioned just now. In the meditation session, using the breath as support, all you need to do is not even to stay with the breath. Don't even need to stay with the breath. Is just to remind yourself the attention, hey, come back to the breath. And on the out breath, release. So this is a condition, right? You are doing something, very little, almost nothing. This is a condition. The condition is return attention to the breath, and on the out breath, to remember to release. Right? So you add a little bit of condition. These new conditions enter the river of your conscious experiences and see what happens. And my experience is after a while, the entire river of conscious experiences starts to change, starts to shift. Right? At different times, of course, they do different things. Sometimes they calm down, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes you are more aware of all the aches and pains in your body. No, other time you say, oh, how nice, one shoulder relaxed, wonderful, right? And so you are working with the conditions, not struggling against the conditions, right? The struggle is pretty useless, tends to actually aggravate the situation, right? Okay, so any last questions or comments? Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah, these sort of things, I use a scheme from the Buddhist teaching. Buddhist teaching doesn't have wood and matter. That is the Chinese five elements, yeah. It doesn't matter. You can investigate it based on different scheme. It doesn't really matter. It's just a simple way of... you can also do the periodic table. I'm a chemist by training, right? There's 100 over different known elements, calcium, magnesium, carbon, nitrogen, oxygen. I won't do it. It takes forever to analyze and also pointless. It's pointless to analyze into oxygen and carbon and nitrogen. What's the point, no? Yeah. So you choose a scheme to analyze that is simple, don't take forever, but helps you to kind of understand what is happening. And that's it. That's all it is. Yeah. So, okay. Any other? Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. So you're talking about, in your daily life when we deal with daily affairs of life, paying bills, dealing with different individuals, inevitably there is a sense of self involved. Yeah. See, the thing about the Buddha's teaching is the Buddha is not trying to ask you to get rid of yourself, you know. So, and we probably will always have this sense of self, like, I'm here, and you are over there, I don't mix them up and think that I'm you and you are me, and maybe then they might decide to commit you to an institution, But what it means is that, apart from this, just the convention of the world, my name is Wai Chong, and your name is Tara, So I don't mix them up and say, oh, am I Tara? Am I Wai Chong? No, okay? So we maintain that kind of convention. But on a deeper level, I don't hold on to the self. I don't kind of have this sense that, this is mine, this is me, you cannot... That's when we get grasping onto the self. And then that kind of grasping is over and above the usual sense. When we grasp, the world suddenly is divided, I'm me and you might be my enemy, So then we react, that's right. So long as we don't get caught up in that kind of self-grasping, it's perfectly fine, I was talking to my friend, on the check, I sign my name. I don't sign someone else's name, right? Otherwise the check will not work, isn't it? No. So we maintain the conventions of our society. Yeah. Yeah. There's no problem when people ask you what's your name to say it's Wai Chong. Yeah. But otherwise it would be like we study more Buddhism and become more mad, more crazy, isn't it? Right. Any other comments or questions? Okay, if not, so this concludes this short course on insight meditation. There will be a long break for this Learn to Meditate series because I'm away and Lama Zopa Rinpoche, our spiritual director, will be visiting in September. So when we come back, I can't remember, either end of September or the beginning of October, on the Saturday, I start a new series on mindfulness, ta-da, suitable for beginners and advanced practitioners. So especially if you know of people who, someone actually asked me, because I think this insight meditation is a little bit not so beginner. So if you know of anybody who are interested and they want to have a more beginner level or really beginner level meditation, then I think that course is suitable. But we are going to go also a bit deeper into mindfulness, into different, I forgot what is the name. I think usually it's called Four Applications of Mindfulness. Applying mindfulness to body, applying mindfulness to our feeling, applying mindfulness to the mind, and applying mindfulness to certain basic facts of our life, of reality. Right? So there are different ways we can apply mindfulness, and as we learn to do that, we can see what sort of benefits can come up when we cultivate this quality of mindfulness. Right? So I cannot remember, it's either four or five. I think most probably starting in October. Yeah. So you keep a lookout for it. 28th of September. Okay, thank you. Right, end of September. All right, this is my advertisement. So thank you very much for your attention. I wish you all the best. I hope you continue to enjoy meditating. All right, I'll see you when I see you. Okay?
Sure.